Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Protect your family's future with life cover from Zurich. Talk to a financial broker to find out more.
Now, spending rules for public infrastructure projects have been relaxed as the capital budget for the building of such vital facilities as hospital facilities and schools was underspent by €690 million last year. The changes have been announced today by Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Public Expenditure. I spoke with the Minister earlier about this decision and I asked him why this change has been made.
Much of that was due to the fact that because inflation went up so much in our economy in 2022, it did mean that a number of capital projects that we were hoping would go ahead last year, or a number of capital programmes that were due to be spent, for example, by local authorities, didn't happen because the cost of doing those projects went up so much due to the surge in inflation last year.
So how will what you have announced today address that issue, or will it?
I would respectfully differ when you say it's a relaxation of our public spending rules. What it is, however, is a change in our public spending rules. And the key change here is that we are looking to shorten the decision-making process for projects that are above a certain size so that they can be evaluated more quickly. And by allowing that work to happen quicker, it should allow us to say yes to projects who in particular might see their value go up a lot in the future because of the impact of inflation. So the changes that we are announcing will play a part in dealing with the issues of last year, but they won't deal with it in its entirety.
And that new level of cost of which a new proposal will be considered a major project, that's going to be raised from €100 million to €200 million. So if a project is under €200 million, it won't have to go through as many stages as it has had to go through up to this point. Is that correct?
That's it, Sarah. What will happen is that for those kind of projects, there used to be a decision-making process that involved five different stages. We will now have three stages with regard to it. And we will be assigning a lot more individual responsibility to accounting offices within government departments to allow them to assure themselves that the key requirements of the code are met. And we believe at a time in which inflation is affecting the price of raw materials so much, that alone is a reason for a change like this.
And how many projects then do you expect will fall below that new threshold that you've put in place?
So we believe at the moment there will be between 50 and around 100 projects that will be affected by a change like this. It's difficult to say, Sarah, how many of those projects will all fall in to the coming calendar year because different projects move at different speeds. But overall, it's going to be between 50 and 100 projects. And the projects that will be most affected by something like this will be projects that will sit within the Department of Health and also within the Department of Transport.
So very welcome, I'm sure, particularly in the Department of Health, as we know, hospitals all around the country calling out for new wards and extra space for beds, etc. Do you have any idea how much more quickly then, as a result of these changes, projects might be able to be delivered?
So again, the answer will vary project by project. But in general, we believe there should be an improvement in the length of time that's required to make these decisions by between 4 and 6 months in average. And obviously 4 to 6 months can make a big difference when the price of raw materials is going up, or more importantly, when somebody is waiting for a new bed or they're waiting for a local road or to be improved or a new bus to be made available. So it's 4 to 6 months overall, but for some projects, that improvement could be an even bigger one.
You mentioned that this will help, but it won't entirely solve the problem with inflation and construction projects. And we've seen, you know, lots of different state construction projects around the country, schools and things like that, getting stalled because of inflation, because the cost is going beyond what is reasonable or possible. Is there anything that can be done to address that?
Yeah, so I think there's two things, one of which we will be doing. We will be doing this part of additional changes that we've made. So firstly, we do need to find ways of giving certainty to those who are involved in building these projects regarding what their liability could be for the cost of these projects were they to go up. So we're going to bring in and formalise some changes with regard to the contracts that we sign between those who are delivering the projects for the state and for the state who's paying for those projects. And this will be a thing called liability caps, where we will look at how we can share the risk for projects better amongst all who are delivering them and bring caps in for some of those liabilities. And then the second thing that we will do, Sarah, but this will be later in the year as part of the budget, is we'll announce what will be the capital spending plan for another 3 years on top of where we are. And if state bodies are clearer, you know, what is the money they will have all the way up to 26 or 2027, it will give greater confidence for these projects to begin now.
All right, I want to ask you separately, Minister, about the eviction ban, because today was the last day of the Dáil before the eviction ban lapses. I don't know if you heard Wayne Stanley, Executive Director at the Simon Communities of Ireland, speaking to Morning Ireland this morning, and he was saying that when the eviction ban is lifted, they expect to see a very significant increase in the number of people contacting their services. Where do you expect those people to go?
So I appreciate that for some who will be affected by this, it's going to be very, very tough, Sarah. It's one of the toughest decisions I've ever been involved in. I do want to just emphasise again that it is my considered view that if we were to prolong the moratorium, the problem would only get bigger again in the future and even more people would be affected. So where do I hope such people will be able to go who are facing the threat of eviction? Number of different options that will be there. Number one, if other rental accommodation is available. Number two, if they are a HAP tenant, we have brought changes in that will allow HAP tenants to allow the local authority to purchase rental properties that have HAP tenants currently within them. And then we're also looking at bringing in changes then across the coming months to allow new ways in which rental properties like that could also be purchased. But look, I do really appreciate for some who will be affected by this. It is tough. It's a big moment. We're doing what we can to provide alternative accommodation. But regrettably, I think even more would be affected by this decision were we to prolong the moratorium into the future.
You're talking about if other rental accommodation was available. Simon Community is saying today there's 29 properties available around the country, the lowest level ever, HAP properties.
Yes, I know. I know these properties are in short supply. We also, this year alone, have made just under 2,000 additional successful HAP tenancy agreements. So it can be done. Every month, more and more of them are being signed. More rental properties are coming into the HAP sector, which is the housing assistance payment sector. But I do accept there's a shortage of them at the moment. And that's one of the reasons why we've given local authorities more money, so that if there is a HAP tenant in an existing rental property that's affected by the moratorium, that the local authority would have the ability to purchase that property.
Yeah, and that is the tenant in situ scheme, which I know has been in place for very many months now. I think it's in the hundreds, the numbers that have actually been completed. I know there are more in the pipeline, but lots of local authorities saying they simply don't have the resources to deal with this, to be managing all these extra properties. Lots of local authorities saying they're a bit confused as to exactly what the guidelines are, because there are no national guidelines for the tenant in situ scheme.
So this is why the Department of Housing and myself, Minister O'Brien, are working together, you know, to clarify this, to make it clear how this scheme would work. The resources have been put in place and were put in place as part of the decision on the end of the moratorium to provide over 1,000 additional purchases through this scheme. So the resources are there and they will be made available. And if there is any confusion or any clarity that needs to be supplied to individual local authorities regarding how to do it, that will be done.
But you're working to clarify this, Minister. And again, the problem is this weekend people are going to find themselves with nowhere to go. You know, and I know you've heard these arguments of extending the eviction ban even for 3 months to allow the measures that you have brought in, you and your government are planning to bring in, to allow those measures settle and be ready to go, as opposed to be working on them to get them ready to go.
Very fair point. Again, though, the decision in relation to the tenant in situ scheme, that is a scheme that has been up and running for some time. You're right to say that not every local authority has made use of it that we would want. But what we are doing in the weeks that have been available to us since the decision has been considered is making sure that scheme is clear to everybody. And like really regretfully, because I know how the difficulty that could be caused by this decision as well, my view is that if we were to extend it even for another 3 months, In 3 months' time, the number of people who might be exiting the rental sector, the number of landlords who will be exiting the rental sector, I believe would be even bigger than it is today. And I believe that any extension of the scheme undermines the credibility of us actually bringing the scheme to an end. And the more the sense grows within the rental sector that a moratorium in evictions won't end, the fewer landlords there will be in our country.
Because you will have seen the research from the RTB that says the landlord's main concern is tax. That it's tax and regulation, it's not necessarily the eviction ban. So if you in 3 months' time are ready to bring a tax package, which I know you decided not to do in the last budget, perhaps that would offset the idea of lifting the eviction ban or extending the eviction ban for 3 months.
Well, actually, in the last budget, I did bring forward a tax package for the rental sector. We brought in the €500 credit for tenants for last year.
I'm talking about for landlords, yeah.
But also then for landlords, we brought in further changes in the tax code to allow new rental properties that are currently unused to be brought into the rental sector. You are right, and I do accept your point, that in recent budgets I made the decision not to change the income tax that a landlord pays on income they receive from a rental property. The reason why I did that is I do believe quite fundamentally that all income should be taxed in the same way. Mm. And I think I would face the question, why is a tenant, for example, paying the higher rate of income tax on the income they receive that they're using to pay their rent?
But
that a landlord is receiving is taxed at a lower rate. Just in relation to the question that you put to me there, the government decision on this matter is we make a decision on taxation matters as part of the budget. And the Minister for Finance, Minister McGrath, has not reached a view in relation to what that package could be. And imagine he won't do that he's forming the budget itself.
I just want to ask you just finally in relation to the eviction ban, the Simon community has also said today that as far as they're concerned or aware, there is no additional emergency accommodation in Dublin. Simon community is also telling Drive Time today that as far as they're aware, there is no additional emergency accommodation in Galway. For people who find themselves, who aren't HAP tenants, whose landlords aren't selling to the local authority, who don't fall into any of the safety nets that you say as a government you've put in place, who can't find emergency accommodation, what do you say to them, or will you do something to make sure there is emergency accommodation?
No, we'll provide all the funding that we can to make sure that emergency accommodation is available. I didn't hear the particular reports that you're referring to, but I'm not doubting either you or the Simon community for a moment. But myself and Dara O'Brien are working to continually increase the budget, to do all we can to make sure emergency accommodation is available, for God forbid, for those who do need us. And obviously, if there's any funding or any more work that needs to be done in relation
and
to that,
if the capacity isn't there, Minister, even if you give the funding and the capacity isn't there because the hotels are getting full with tourists or refugees, you know, if there's literally nowhere for people to go and you see over the next couple of weeks families living in their cars, would that change your mind, or is there anything that would change this government's mind?
Well, I'm confident that we will be able to find staff capacity if it is needed, because we'll move heaven and earth to do it. But the decision that we have made in relation to bringing the moratorium to an end is driven by the fact that, number one, we did say it was an emergency and temporary measure. And number two, if we were to extend it, the chances of it actually ever coming to an end in the eyes of the rental sector and landlords would be, I think they would see the chances of it actually coming to an end are low. And ultimately, I believe that would create a situation in which we will have nobody wanting to become a landlord, or fewer people wanting to become a landlord, and those who are currently landlords wanting to leave.
Can I ask you about a report from IFAC today? They've warned that the funding of the state pension is going to come under increased pressure in the coming decade as the population ages, and they've suggested that PRSI rates should be increased immediately so that the so-called baby boomer generation, who are going to be accessing the pension first, will pay towards some of the pension and while they're still working, rather than loading it all on younger workers. Is that fair?
So, Sarah, we have said that we will, over time, have to increase the rate of PRSI that is paid in our country. But those who we will be asking to pay the higher rate of PRSI, we're asking them to pay that rate for their own pensions. So the reason why we will ultimately have to increase the rate of PRSI in our country isn't to ask people to pay for somebody else's pension. It's to ensure that when they come to retire at the end of what I hope will be a longer and healthier life, that they have a pension for themselves. But I do expect that in a number of years to come, within that time frame, we will have to make a moderate and slight change in PRSI, so that year by year, when these changes are made, we can ensure that people who will pay that rate will then have a pension available to them in many decades' time at the level they want and we want to give to them.
Minister Pascal Donoghue, thank you very much for your time.